Are you ready to get serious about building content sites and building a profitable business online? Welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. We bring you the latest field-tested tips, tricks, and strategies for building a profitable online asset. We interview industry experts, share customer success stories, and reveal our own experiences working on hundreds of sites to inspire and motivate you to make something happen. Let's do this.
Welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. Today we have Alex Galanos and we dive into foreign SEO websites. Well, we actually start this one with looking at gambling SEO because Alex spent a good 5 or so years working within gambling SEO. We dive into a little bit of that, but then we go into his Greek website in the parenting niche and we go into his rapid success with that site, now currently at 100,000 views a month with only around 120 pages indexed. And we dive into his whole process from content to the website structure, things like schema, links, how he's monetized the site, his way he's done his EAT, and all sorts of things. There's some good stuff in here. Even if you're in an English language site, the way he kind of designed or structured his homepage and the things that he's done there should give you something to think about and to add to your own site. So sit back and enjoy.
This episode is brought to you by Niche Website Builders, an agency dedicated to helping people just like you build profitable content sites. Niche Website Builders are the hands-off content site marketing agency you always wished existed. It's run by content site marketers for content site marketers, and they help both investors and individuals alike build profitable online properties. They provide a fully outsourced approach to content creation, link building, and done-for-you website builds, the same approach they use on their own six-figure portfolios. For example, their content packages come with a proprietary keyword research process, are written by in-house native English speakers, formatted using templates proven to convert, and uploaded to WordPress with affiliate links added so that all you need to do is hit the publish button. Check them out at nichewebsite.builders/show. That's nichewebsite.builders/show and fill out the form to get coupon codes for 10% more content or a 10% discount on links with your first order sent right to your inbox.
All right, welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast today. Alex Galanos, how are you?
I'm good, James. How are you? Thank you very much for having me.
No, I'm very good. Thank you for coming on. So you play in the foreign SEO niche, which is interesting because most people listen to this probably targeting the US markets. This will be a good episode to kind of go down that area. But do you want to maybe provide a brief background about yourself, Alex, and we'll dive right in.
Yep, absolutely. So I started in SEO back in 2017, I think. So I've been in the industry for about 6 years now and going. I've been 5 years into gambling SEO, both on the affiliate side of things for about 2.5 years, and then transitioning to the operational side of things. So as part of a betting company / casino operator. Great experience overall. Like I always say, SEO in gambling counts differently as opposed to other niches like dog years. It was a very, training under very competitive circumstances and in markets that have, many regulations and restrictions. And you kind of, have to get resourceful with handling things and finding your way around limitations and stuff like that. So that was up until September when I switched. I moved to a new company, which is in the overall travel industry, and specifically in the ground transportation, which is called Hapa. And it's essentially a ground transportation marketplace, let's say, like a comparison engine, which was a very nice change of pace because, I had been in gambling for 5 years. So, I'm not really a player myself. So in terms of the actual product, it wasn't really that relevant to me.
What was with the gambling SEO stuff? That stuff is, I don't know why, it's just so interesting. It's like a whole nother world going down that road. But so were you in like the English markets or were you in the foreign markets for the gambling?
I was in many markets basically. No, not I mean the English market, yes and no, meaning that we mostly operated in non-English markets, but also offering the website in the English language. So I've done we were present in Greece because the company was based in Greece, and that's where it started from. My last company, I mean. And then markets like Romania, Portugal, Bulgaria, Germany, which is an extremely competitive market, Brazil, Peru, Chile. What else? I can't even remember. It was like 10 different markets. I've lost
So,
track.
what occurs on the operational side then? You mentioned you moved from SEO to the operations. What did you do on the operational side? Are you just kind of looking at like managing it all?
No. It was just in terms of SEO. It was part of a three people internal SEO team. Of course, with external agency support on a market level. And then it was basically full on SEO. I mean, whatever you could imagine, on page SEO, of course, link building, because obviously in gambling you cannot survive without link building. Then things to do with content and collaborating with the content team, content briefs for articles for the blog, pretty much everything. Like it was full on SEO tech stuff. Tech was the major learning school for me. In that betting operator. I mean, the websites were really, really large and with many, many technical problems, page speed issues. When we first joined, the index was in a terrible condition. So it was a very, very effective tech SEO training for me.
No, fair enough. But I guess the question is then, would you ever recommend someone go into the gambling niche? And would you recommend someone go in? Well, do you need, I guess, prior or already some kind of network within the gambling niche to be able to get in there and actually have success? Or can you start from scratch and actually still make it?
It really depends on what side of the gambling niche you're going to be dealing with. Meaning that if you're an affiliate, obviously, because you're going to be largely involved in things like content creation and giving content briefs and all that type of thing, essentially you have to know the product really well. Which, if you're not an actual gambler, it's more difficult because you don't have knowledge of the product. So you cannot review the product effectively. You cannot know the different aspects and so on. Whereas on the operational side, of course, I went from affiliate to the operational side. So I kind of had, some part of the knowledge. But I guess you could still make it. Even without that knowledge, just because it's very much different in the operational side, because you're just optimizing the website based on what users are searching for. You're not reviewing stuff, so you don't have to know the product that well. But yeah, I mean, even so. Dealing with that many different markets and markets with extreme limitations when it comes to regulations, like I said, you have to be very resourceful and find ways around stuff, because oftentimes what happened is that regulations changed. And then this meant that for whatever reason, you were not able to target anymore the XYZ keyword. And you had, I don't know, like 1,000 pages around that topic cluster.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a mess. You have to find ways to deal with this. And yeah, it was like one of the best learning schools ever.
I remember because I used to play a lot of online poker. I love poker, and Black Friday back in the day, where basically the US banned poker, online poker, and all the sites went down. There was a huge thing all about that. People had their money stuck in certain things. Yeah. So I can imagine that's a bit of a thing to look out for.
Yeah, this is a common scenario in many other markets as well. Even for Germany, there was a case when the local regulator banned the use of the casino keyword only for land-based businesses. So you were not able to target the term casino after, I think it was November 2020, was it? So you were not able to use the term at all in any of your pages if you were an online operator, which of course you can imagine created a huge mess, because basically, like, when it comes to the casino product, the highest volume term was casino, an online casino.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, it took some time to find your way around this.
I can imagine. And I guess you've gone from the ultra black hat gambling into your white hat Greek site now. If you want to share your niche, you can do that. But do you want to maybe dive into kind of what you got going on there? And we'll go into some more details.
Yeah, of course. So essentially, it's a parenting website that me and my wife built the website went live in July 2021. We started conceptualizing the website back in, it was 2020. Originally, it was an idea of my wife. She has an educational background in several educational institutions, mostly preschool institutions. So things like kindergartens, nursery schools, creative playgrounds, that type of thing. So she had all the subject matter expertise around that whole industry. So her original idea was to build a website that would host informational content around things like baby activities, children activities, creative ways to entertain your kid at home, you know, that type of thing. And then, I came into the whole thing, and just because of my background and, the SEO stuff, I thought that maybe, we would turn this into like a parenting knowledge hub, as opposed to just things like activities and stuff like that. And also include an online directory to the website. So, the idea would be that whatever a parent would like to find, whether that would be educational content about health related issues, psychology, and all such topics, or a business that has to do with kids, like kindergartens or nursery schools or playgrounds to take your kid to, they would find this to our website. So this is how the whole thing came to be. The website went live in July 2021. And basically it was still full on COVID. So the case was that this whole idea with the online directory got pushed back a bit because all those land-based businesses were pretty much hit by the pandemic. So there wasn't really any budget to spend on promotional activities. So we kind of shifted our strategy to running the website primarily as a publisher and, you know, pushing all that informational content out there, getting the traffic in, and then having good traffic numbers, being able to approach whatever brand or, you know, kids-related business would like to be promoted on our website, and actually being able to provide value. Because what we saw is that, you know, most of the competition is selling promotional packages when, you know, they don't have decent traffic, which is something that we wouldn't like to do. It's, I mean, you know, it's the whole point is providing actual value, not just fooling people. So what we did is that it went unexpectedly well, and we managed having in under 12 months, we managed driving more than 100,000 monthly traffic, with 97% of the traffic coming from the organic channel. So it's like pure organic, I would say. And also coming from an extremely tight index. So our index is like, I think like 120 pages. With, you know, the pages that are actually driving traffic being, I don't know, like 50, because obviously you have static pages like About Us pages and category pages and the homepage, which do not contribute any significant traffic. And of course, all this is completely non-branded. So this is, we're not doing any ads. We're not engaging, at least so far, in any promotional activity. So our brand is pretty much non-existent. Of course, not necessarily that's a good thing. It's something that's, I'd like us to change in the near future, because obviously nothing is better than a solid brand. And, you know, you're pretty much invincible from Google updates and all that type of thing.
I think the important thing to note as well is it's a Greek site. So it's a foreign language site.
It is,
pulling 100,000 page views a month. Did you project this, I guess, looking at the niche before getting into it, seeing, okay, there is quite a bit of search volume, or you just went into it because this is what your wife had expertise in and you're just hoping to get some traffic?
Yes and no. I mean, we had done some research prior to launching the website, finding topics and stuff like that. But the way I'm viewing things, it's like before you actually launch the website, you can't really be 100% sure as to how much for how many of those keywords you're actually gonna rank. I mean, I did know prior to launching the website that most of the keywords were not competitive on a keyword level. So I knew that we wouldn't need to have a lot of link building in place. But on the other hand, we would be competing with websites that had been in the industry for many, many years, with, you know, a great authority and domain ratings and all the usual metrics. So in terms of pure keyword competitiveness, it's not competitive at all. But in terms of the actual websites that you're competing against, I mean, yeah, there are some very aged websites that have authority in the niche. So, we started small, by, targeting, you know, very, very long tail searches And as the website went on and as we started gaining some topical relevance and some authority, then we started going for the higher and higher volume keywords. And we've ended up ranking for some very high volume keywords, both that are very niche specific, meaning that, the parenting niche basically touches upon many, many other niches like health, psychology, many other sub niches, let's say, of parenting, as opposed to more generic searches like birthday wishes, for example, or wishes for your newborn, or which is the high search volume, really. So we ended up ranking both for more generic high volume searches, as well as some very niche specific health related ones, psychology related ones, and some very, very core terms as well, which is, an interesting case.
I think what's interesting as well is the way you've gone about publishing the content, I guess, attacking like the entire silo or category at once, kind of before moving on. Do you want to maybe dive into a little bit how you went about creating like that content map that you have, and I guess your process behind publishing that content, instead of, you mentioned obviously going after the low competition or long tail keywords, but I'm assuming, I think you didn't just publish all the long tail keywords across all the different categories. You kind of stuck within certain categories before moving on. Is that correct?
Yeah. So our main challenge is that, although we do collaborate with many subject matter experts for EAT abidance purposes as well, most of the content is written internally by us, because basically my wife is the founder and editor-in-chief of the website, so she either writes the majority of the content, or at least edits it. So just because we have certain, time restrictions and limitations in place, we had to do some sort of prioritization. So the prioritization that we made was based on pure search volume. So whatever had the biggest search volume, we prioritize that to bring in the traffic to the website, and then go after, the second best, highest volume keywords, / topics, and so on. So original prioritization was based on search volume, and the categories that were developed, originally were based again on search volume, and then at a second stage were based on revenue potential, just because we started also exploring the affiliate avenue. So we started looking into doing things like buying guides and stuff like that. So we also launched that category, and started, doing pieces that had to do with whatever had an affiliate intent, let's say. So with regards to the content map and the whole process, how we're approaching this is that we have the usual content map file, which basically is like a visual depiction of the actual categories of the website, broken down into subcategories and then topics under each subcategory. And then in pretty much each cell, let's say, of that spreadsheet, we kind of link to the content brief of the article, and then also to the keyword research file of the article. So our process is that First of all, we do in-depth keyword research, and as opposed to splitting the long tails of a specific head term across many different pages, many different articles, we create this one super long form content that basically targets the head term of the topic and all the long tails, all the relevant long tails of that head term. And this has proven to work quite well. Obviously, I'm not implying that I would be able to replicate this success in any market, because obviously it also depends on the competitiveness of the market. But what I found out is that if I had to choose between keeping this one super long page as opposed to splitting into three or four different articles, I would go for option number one, because you're keeping a tight index, because all the link equity from the external links gets restricted into that one page and strengthens the page as a whole. And it's, in my eyes, it's essentially what made the website a success, and it's the exact opposite of what the competition was doing. So the competition was pretty much splitting the long tails into 10 different articles.
Yeah.
So yeah.
What made you choose to do it that way then? To write these large kind of like pillar style posts of the main topic with all the long tails in there versus splitting it like everyone else was on the SERPs? Is that a general philosophy that you have within SEO, or is that something you kind of put together just for the site?
Yes and no. It's something that I had practiced before.
Okay.
But it's something that a lot of people choose to do. I know, for example, that this is the classic practice of Brian Dean, Backlinko. So instead of splitting the keywords into several different pages, he creates this one super long piece about link building, for example. I guess it's somewhere in between the answer.
If you're in a more competitive market and you went down that same strategy, would you still write the long tail keywords as separate articles to create internal links back? So for example, that link building one, maybe you're talking about Harrow within that link building massive article. Would you still have a separate article for Harrow then?
Well, this is really, I would say, a rule of thumb, because every market is different. So yeah. Obviously you have to compare, you have to evaluate what the competition is doing and what the competitiveness of the keyword is. And that type of things. For example, what I'm seeing is that in the ground transportation industry right now, it's a much more competitive niche. So even for informational queries, which usually the case is that they're much easier, there are cases that you have informational queries with, like 40 keyword difficulty or 50 keyword difficulty.
Yeah.
With websites having built like links from 150 referring domains to their articles, which obviously, looking at this, you have to, adjust your strategy as to maybe we cannot go with this one super long piece because the competition targets queries split into different pages and then builds like a ton of links to each one of those articles. So, it would be much more difficult if we went with this one super long piece. So, every market is different. Yeah. Every niche is different. I guess what works for one niche doesn't necessarily work for the other, or even within the same niche, what works for one country doesn't necessarily mm-hmm. work for the other. It's like, you assess things on many different levels.
Yeah. Yeah, nice. And before we get into monetization as well, you mentioned Eat, and I love what you've done on your site as well. You've got, I guess, listed doctors on there. You've got links to all the different social profiles and things like that. Do you want to maybe dive into what you believe creates good Eat signals on your site to help, I guess, Google trust you?
Yeah, absolutely. So in my eyes, EAT is something that's not an afterthought. It's actually something that we included in the actual building of the website and the design of the website. It's something that you have to include in the UX of the website. So we try to take all those boxes of what Google likes to see in sensitive niches like parenting on a page type level. So starting from the About Us page, for example, we try to, you know, describe things on the About Us page that had to do with what's the vision and the mission of the website, or what the website is about, or you know, why we can talk about the topics that we talk. Even for me, something that a lot of the websites are missing, especially in sensitive niches, is putting an actual photo of the team in your About Us page, just to actually prove that, you know, there are real people behind this website, not just an AI tool writing content. And this is who we are, and this is our credentials, and this is our profession, and so on. And then we also listed the several author profiles in our About Us page, with, you know, the title, the profession of each subject matter expert, and so on. Another thing that's very, very important in sensitive niches is having author pages. So we made sure for every person that writes content on the website to create an author page that has their name, their title, their social profiles, a very, very detailed bio of what they do, and, you know, their credentials and relevant experience and whatever else would benefit to the EAT signals. And then even listing external websites where that specific author writes content on, and linking to those websites as well. And then, of course, you know, all the generic EAT pages, like a Contact Us page with all the contact details, like, you know, emails and the phone number, and all the both the generic emails as well as the personal emails from some of the people of the team. A contact form, so that, you know, anybody that wants to contact us, they can do it from there as well. And then we also made sure that we included all those contact details in the footer of the website, which is obviously visible in all pages of the website. When it comes to the actual articles, we make sure that those articles are posted under a specific author. So in all the articles, you know, we indicate who that article was written by, and they can also be taken to the dedicated profile page for that author. And then another thing is that we, even going to the homepage, we built a certain section towards the bottom of the homepage that kind of functions like a mini About Us page. So it's like, let's say, a summary of our vision, our mission, and what we do straight from the homepage. Just because, you know, the homepage is a very important page for any website. So we wanted to, you know, take the EAT box straight from the homepage, and then also including all the authors straight from the homepage. And then one last thing with regards to the EAT is also the backlinks that we're getting, meaning that we're trying to get signals from websites that are 100% relevant to our website, that you know, are not spammy in any way, that also on their side apply to certain EAT standards, just to, you know, be 100% compliant with Google's guidelines.
Yeah, nice. And I love the way you've done your homepage as well. Do you want to maybe run through your structure there of maybe of how your homepage is and kind of why you've done it that way? Because I think I need to implement some of the things you've done too, because as you mentioned, that stuff, the philosophy stuff and the team stuff at the bottom, is it makes the website not look like just a typical affiliate site. It looks like a real kind of business.
Yeah. Well, it's, I guess the way it's structured like this, it's because it's not really an affiliate site. It's at least when it was conceptualized and designed, it wasn't designed as an affiliate website. The affiliate side came afterwards, just as a pure monetization stream. So the way we've built the homepage is that we structured it as an overview page, basically linking to all important sections straight from it, and also having the UX to support that. So, for example, just because there are specific content blocks on the homepage that drive to sections that have more commercial content, and some of those sections host the affiliate content as well, we wanted to include this, this, let's say, content block straight from the homepage to also get, you know, the juice straight from the homepage. And also, even from a pure user perspective, I think it's a nice way to, you know, include important content blocks to important categories on your main page, because it's basically like it functions like your storefront in a way. And then we also made sure to include a certain content block for the online directory section of the website, straight from the homepage, which also there we built the ability to even include specific businesses that would supposedly have paid, let's say, the premium package in order to get promoted to the homepage. So the idea was that anybody that would visit the homepage would find the main categories for the businesses that would be promoted on the online directory, as well as specific businesses that were the, let's say, the preferred ones based on our, you know, evaluation standards. And then we also made sure to build a section that hosts all the latest articles on the homepage, which I think is a crucial content block for any website that hosts informational content, just because usually the case with new articles is that it gets time for them to get indexed, just because if they are dug deep somewhere in the, let's say, structure of the website, the hierarchy of the website, then the bot cannot easily locate them, even if you ping it through Google Search Console. So it's nice to have the UX to support including those articles straight in your homepage, and, you know, enabling the Google bot to visit them in an easier way, and also, you know, transferring the juice straight from the homepage to the newly published content.
Nice. With the regarding monetization, before going into the actual some of the other things you mentioned, obviously selling packages to promote certain businesses within, or certain places within the parenting niche within where you are. How are you valuing, I guess, the price of that? Like, how do you know how much you're going to charge these businesses to be on the first, on your homepage, or on the first place for certain directories?
Good question. Well, you know, you have to get creative with things like that. You have to find ways to essentially learn what the competition is charging. So that's what we did. And then also evaluating the traffic numbers of your competition and the value that you're giving to your customers. You charge, like, you know, more, less, more, you know, equal. So we found out that the competition was charging XYZ amount based on their traffic. So we kind of said, okay, we have 10 times their traffic. Obviously, we're not going to charge 10 times, you know, more in terms of price, but you kind of, you know, set the benchmark also against what the competition is doing. You know, the competition in Greece is both in terms of, let's say, the expertise and the online overall niche, as well as the pillars of how you're able to attract traffic to a website, is very low. So it wasn't really difficult for us to, you know, build the packages. The real challenge was that, like I said, just because the website was built when COVID hit, that the actual businesses did not have enough budget to spend on promotional activities, just because they were purely land-based businesses.
No, fair enough. And then I wanted to dive into the actual, or your current monetization strategies right now. So what have you got going on for the site to make money?
So like I said, when we found out that the online directory section of the website was kind of challenging because of the timing, we decided to start running the website as a publisher. So we started looking at how we could monetize through ads, for example. Sadly, in Greece, unlike several other tier one countries, there are not that many options when it comes to ad networks. So we don't have ad networks like Mediavine, for example, that I know is a premium ad network in the US. So sadly, most of the options are restricted to AdSense, which, of course, you know, it's not ideal, but it is what it is. So one revenue stream in the current state of things is AdSense. And then recently we started exploring the affiliate side of things. Specifically, again, sadly, in Greece, there are not that many options when it comes to affiliates. So we have only one local affiliate network, and pretty much nothing else. However, most of the businesses, most of the well-known brands in Greece are present in that affiliate network. So, you know, it's kind of a, let's say, an old affiliate network with many, many collaborations with all the well-known brands. Yeah, so we also started exploring that. So what we did is we created a specific category for buying guides in the website. And we also built some custom affiliate widgets to, you know, increase the likelihood of people converting from the affiliate articles.
Mm-hmm. Nice. And then you also mentioned about the links coming back and being relevant to your site. In a foreign language niche, do you only go after Greek sites for links, or do you also go after English links as well? Does it matter?
Well, to be honest, up until this point, there wasn't really any significant need to build links. Mm. Just because
in the future, if you're looking to build links, would you branch out into, say, the US parenting market and get links there? Does that matter so much?
No, not really. I mean, you know, it wouldn't be my first option. I mean, you know, to get the most out of your link building activities, especially if you're you know, active in a very specific market, hosting content around the native language, then in my eyes, you know, the most effective solution would be to get links from websites in the local language, not from, you know, the US or in any other market. Plus, you know, there are many, many publishers in Greece that we can get links from. Mm. It's not like we have run out of options, so we have to, you know, branch out to non-native websites.
Yeah.
But even so, you know, I mean, we it's funny because if you just put the website on any SEO tool, like, I don't know, Ahrefs, it has a DR of, I think, 8, which implies, like, you know, non-existent link building activity. But it's funny because of, you know, the traffic number. So, yeah, I mean, no need for link building, really, at least up until this point.
Yeah, fair enough. And, I actually want to go a little bit into your on-page stuff, because I know you have one question I have is with the FAQ schema you have. So you have the FAQ section, and that the actual answer to the question is hidden because it's in a drop-down box. Does that matter in terms of Google indexing? Like, can Google still see the answer even though it's hidden behind the drop-down box within that schema?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it can, because it's also, first of all, it's in the source code, and then obviously, you know, we have FAQ schema implemented, which, you know, it also displays the question and the answer in the actual search results. So, you know, the accordion content is 100% visible in Google.
Gotcha.
And also overall displayed in the SERPs.
Gotcha. And then as well, obviously you've implemented some schema around your site as well. Do you want to maybe dive into kind of what you've done there and why?
Yeah, of course. So again, the schema mapping, let's say, was done in the actual building of the website. So what we had done when we built the website was that on a page type level, we had researched the available schema types, also based on what Google was offering at the moment, as well as what the competition was using. And when I'm saying competition, I mostly refer to, you know, foreign competition, because obviously the competition in Greece is, again, non-existent. So I had to basically research abroad, not in Greece. So we had done this mapping on a page type level, meaning that I would go, for example, for the articles, and I would research what types of schema we could apply. So, for example, in the articles right now, we tag them with article schema, and then FAQ schema specifically for the FAQ section at the end of the articles. Then for the author pages, we tag them with profile page schema. So some of those schema types were built custom based on the page type, but some of those were also offered on the on our SEO plugin. So we're using Yoast SEO. So some of those were offered on Yoast SEO. So we are using those. And then on the About Us page, for example, we are using about page schema. We have even tagged the Contact Us page with Contact Us schema.
Oh, okay.
I didn't even know that a Contact Us schema existed, to be honest. I found out when we built the website, but yeah. And then, of course, all the static schema types like, you know, breadcrumb schema that, you know, is applied across all pages of the website.
On your profile schema then, are you almost doing kind of like a same as and linking like where that author has been, I guess, featured or the other profiles around the internet? It's like same as this Facebook profile, same as, you know, this author on this website kind of thing to link like an authorship graph, I guess?
Yeah, I think so. I'm not going to lie. I'm not 100% sure, but I think that we are doing that. Yeah. It's a good question for me to check, really.
Yeah, it's something I need to do. I mean, if anyone's really interested in schema, go back and listen to Clint Butler on this podcast because he's a big, big fan and we dove into it there as well. I know Adam and Mark have gone over schema within their live streams too. And I've been sitting here listening and saying I'm going to implement it, but I still haven't. It takes time. You have to go on the back end. You have to really understand some of the stuff and how to do it, which can be a mission. But do you believe it has like a quite a positive impact to your site doing it?
Well, definitely it doesn't have a negative impact. So yeah, I guess it does have a positive impact. But again, it really depends on the market. I mean, you know, for Greece, even the stuff that we are doing thus far is way beyond the competition. So I guess, yeah, the same as thing would maybe make a difference in an extremely competitive market like the US. But yeah, I mean, you never know how much competitive a market can get in the near future. So, you know, in my eyes, I basically view each website as, you know, I'm doing the best to my knowledge that I can possibly do. Also, you know, depending on, you know, how competitive a niche can get in the future.
Yeah, no, fair enough. I think that's pretty much everything I wanted to ask you, Alex. If people want to find you and see what you're up to, where can they do that?
I'm very, very active on LinkedIn. My username is Alex Galinos, Galinos. So, you know, feel free to hit me up, send me a connect request and get it from there.
Yeah, perfect. That's easy. I'll throw that down in the description too for anyone who wants to find Alex. But thank you for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Yep, same here. Thank you very much for having me, James.
Thanks for tuning in and I hope you enjoyed the show. Don't forget to like and subscribe wherever you're listening. Until the next episode, goodbye.